Welcome to La Pena. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. It's great to see everybody. Thank you for supporting this really wonderful and important project. We're honored to have Sam Stoker, the filmmaker, here tonight. And please also support the project if you haven't already by making a small donation at the door. That will really help the project continue on. And just a few housekeeping things. Bathrooms, there's two through that door. There's also two through the cafe. You're also welcome to purchase food and drink at the cafe and bring it in here, no problem. And that's about it. Make sure you pick up a La Pena calendar. We have lots of great events going on all the time, classes, workshops, films, music events. And I'm now going to turn over the mic to our MC, the People's Minister of Information, J.R.
Thank y'all for coming. First, can we ask everyone to turn off their phones? Can all of you go in and put it on vibrate or turn it off, something like that? Tonight is a very important night in Oakland history. Today, tomorrow, I should say, is a very important day in Oakland history, one where we have the opportunity to talk about police terrorism, but not just from the viewpoint of being a victim of police terrorism. A lot of us had questions after the murder of Oscar Grant and the murder of so many other people. What do we do in issues of police terrorism? Tonight, we're not telling you what position to take, but we're talking about a position that was taken 5 years ago on this date, 73rd, 74th, and Hamburger. And we have members of the Mixon family in the house today. Y'all can clap it up for them. And I'm not just pointing them out on no celebrity type shit, but I'm pointing them out that they've had to deal with this and deal with the Oakland Police Department for 5 years. When all of the rallies subsided that we all attended, and when the different movements went through its ebbs and flows, you know, they was the ones who on a day-to-day basis had to deal with the harassment of the Oakland Police Department, not just from being black people in a low-income neighborhood, but also for being related to a man who took a stand. So, you know, before we have a panel discussion, before we hear from other people who might be here, we're going to hear from the filmmaker, Sam Stoker, who came all the way from Mexico to present this film to us today. Before that, we're going to see a clip from Operation Small Axe, which actually dealt with how we addressed on the day that it happened, how, you know, people, how we addressed the Associated Press, who was basically the mainstream, you know, public relations team for the state or for the police. And so, you know, me and Sam talked about presenting this, and why it was important is because a lot of times we see police terrorism as an issue dealing with the police, but we don't see the over-encompassing systematic approach that the police are allowed to do their thing in the context, you know, of how the media works, as well as how other elements play into defending how they brutalize and terrorize people. So before we get to that, let's bring Sam Stoker up, the filmmaker of Ghost of March 21st.
Actually, I didn't know I was speaking until afterwards. So I don't have anything planned to say. I don't really have much to say, actually, because I'm more curious and, you know, hearing what y'all think of the film, this being my first film, than I am, like, telling you anything about it right now. But I just want to say thank you for coming. I appreciate the support. And, you know, I have a lot to say about it today, but we'll do that afterwards.
Right now, we're going to have a panel, and we're going to hear what the community has to say, as well as some of the people that we have the Mixon family in the house, but also we have a number of different organizers from the Oscar Grant campaign, people that organized during the Lavelle Mason campaign, and people who work on police terrorism and other issues. Right now, we have Andrea Pritchard from Cop Watch. We have Black Riders is in the house. So, you know, it's a number of other people that are unnamed that I know by face that have participated in one way or another, Indie Bay Media, Dwayne Peterville. So now we're going to have a panel with Gerald Sanders, filmmaker Sam Stoker, and others. So, Gerald, you up here?
I'm right here, bro.
Okay. All right. Sam, you gonna come up here? Well, let's just start it off first. Does anybody have any questions or comments or, you know, we want to hear how did the film hit you guys? Watch it.
Critiques are fine.
Don't everybody speak at one time. No one has anything to say?
Thank you for making it.
There you go.
Thanks, man.
Saying thank you for making it. I was really, really kind of spellbound watching it, focused 100%, unable to take my eyes off of it. I appreciated the drama in it. The photography was compelling. It's all good. It's all good. So thanks again for making it, Sam.
Are we
thinking about Sundance for this?
Probably no, man. I don't know the. I'm not. Can you hear me without this?
No, I'm going to use it.
Yeah, you know, I don't know about that. Sundance isn't important to me. What's important to me, I'm like super influenced by. Well, this started as a project as part of my master's thesis. And while I was at UC Santa Cruz, I was introduced to a form of revolutionary filmmaking in the 1960s and 70s called Burt Cinema. And so I stole a lot of the aesthetics from those films and also the politics. And so I'm sort of opposed to, you know, these bourgeois, you know, film festivals, but I'm not sure if my position is right or not yet.
And I just want to say that we'll be playing at the Oakland International Film Festival. What is that, April 6th? It's April 6th, Sam? When will you be playing at the Oakland International Film Festival?
I should know that.
You can go to oiff.org, Oakland International Film Festival, and it'll be playing at that film festival locally. Did you have something for yourself?
Thanks. You know, I just want to thank Sam and thank all y'all for coming, you know. Let you know from the Mixon family, Sam, you know, we have your support. You did a good job.
I don't think I need to bite down loud.
Wait a minute.
One more thing. Don't believe everything the news and the police tell you.
That's right.
You know, because they got to be brainwashing you. You know, like I say, you know what I mean? And slandering you, you know, with untrue statements. And everything. I mean, I see that firsthand. Thank you. And again, too, you know, especially like I was talking on the news and talking about the fake rape allegations and all that that they were trying to claim that, you know, my nephew did. You know what I mean? And then on the news, you know, some of my friends and everything was telling me, Kurt, watch, they're going to switch it up. They probably not even going to play none of your stuff on the news or what you had said. And the news didn't play none of that what I said about what these fake rape allegations and, you know what I mean, and DNA. Police can always say that you got DNA. Who can prove that they don't when you talk about the police?
Right.
You know, so they try to make him the most hated man in the world because of the fact that they felt that some people were going to look at him like he was a hero because they know how police treat people. you know, in the communities and everything, how they look down on people and all the history and every all the bad things they've done for years and years on. It's a whole much more I want to say. The thing is, I can take up all y'all time, you know. But the thing is, you know, I just see firsthand how they can just slander somebody and this and that. And then the thing is, well, everybody don't know LaVell, so first thing they think, the stuff they see on TV and this and that, how do you know it's not true? You know what I mean? But the thing is, like I said, you know, since our family had to go through it firsthand, you know, and then, so I asked the police and this and that. I said, why would y'all try to plant these fake rapes and this and that on them, this and that? You know what I mean? I was talking to the homicide detectives on the phone, this and that. And after that, they said, well, Mr. Mixon, they said, you know, we don't even want to talk about none of that. I said, what you mean you don't want to talk about none of that? I said, y'all calling me and asking me, you know what I mean, how to build a fear and this and that. You were winning earlier before that happened. I said, hey, I told you all this and that. And so then, so once I started talking about this and that, next thing you know, they hung up the phone.
Wow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mixon. I just wanted to thank everybody for coming out and supporting this, and thank Sam, because Sam has like been almost a part of our family since this happened. So, and I just wanted everybody, I'm sure that a lot of you probably understand a little bit from the film. But it was so much more to my brother that could not be summed up in 30 minutes. And it's just like, it's not even about my brother. Like, it's your brother, it's your cousins, like, your sisters. Like, they don't care. They don't care. So, yeah.
Y'all so much. Greetings. Hello. How y'all doing? My name is Obeya. I'm from Mississippi. You all probably from a lot of places like myself. But as I see scenario here and scenario around the world, you know, it's not just not start. Europeans been jealous of black people for a long time. But whatever reason, I don't know. Jealous and envious is what I've been seeing. I'm 67 years of age, 67,000 years of age, maybe even more than that. But I'm saying this here. You know, for all the Taurus is going on, want to destroy all black people from 1940s and 50s when Eisenhower was in office. They had a thing against black people. Once they said come out of slavery, what are they going to do with them? How are they going to do it? Destroy them. Contraception. They put in. Most Europeans know this. Contraception. And destroying black babies as now. As well, trying to make sissies and punks out of the black men in the plantations.
You have a question, brother?
The question is, and I'm talking, I'm going to get around to that. Question is that all this killing is going on today. The Most High said, 21st Psalm, 27th. 21st, 32nd Psalm, and 32nd Ezekiel, it says, for all the wicked have to go off the earth in this time. Their time is up with. So all of them have been against the Most High holy people going to leave off the earth. We have ways to do that. And we will do that. We don't need no gun, no bomb, no bow, no spear. We can do this all spiritual.
Alright.
Take 24 hours to do that control the thing. Like people from for the beginning of time, or 3, 4, 5 building your baby, or the energy you guys practicing with you.
Congratulations.
Very well. Is there anybody with a question or comment pertaining to the movie?
Yes, sir.
Please make your way up.
Yes, now you see all your faces. I think it's just a sad human condition, you know, that people have to be treated like, you know, what we see in the movie, you know. I don't know, America got, it seems like we got everything, but What happened to humanity? That's what I'm checking. So I'm calling on people of conscience, to find some solution to this. So it's just that that's real degraded to human beings, It's like nobody has to be hunted like an animal. You know what I mean? Where we come from, beasts get treated like this. Nobody's beast. Human beings, So let's find a human condition.
Everybody ain't gonna be
human solution to all this mess, please. I beg you, Official Ude. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just going to be just so minute. I just want to say a few things. We are living in a very, very, very bad time when we have to witness inhumane things as we have here. For Lavelle is my grandson, step-grandson. And before, the weekend before this happened, he came into our bedroom and he said, I'm waiting on the parole officer to come by. I got a job offer. But I can't leave because I don't want him to violate me. He come and I'm not here. So I said, well, I told my wife, I said, honey, when he come, let me talk to him and I'll see if I can do something about that. Because this kid is trying to do better. But he had to have an opportunity to do so. So she said, okay. But I was asleep when he came and she didn't want to wake me up. See, I'm a little bit older than that other brother. I'm 75. Mm-hmm. And when you get a little older, you sleep a little longer. And so when he left, I awakened and she told me. I said, why didn't you wake me? Because I had something to tell this brother. Because down the road, after all this had happened, this could have been prevented.
Yes.
Had the proper steps been taken.
That's correct.
Because a man on man is different from a man and a woman talking. Because we have a little bit more grit, we have a little bit more experience, we have a little bit more everything, because God made us that way. And whatever our children decide to do, I was young at one time. I made a lot of mistakes, but the Lord is fortunate and overlooked them, and I lived and what have you. But I say this, we must all, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of the condition, we must all have feeling for one another. Because if you don't, we all fall victim of the same thing. Thank you, brother.
All right. Thank you, brother.
I just want to also add that there's expenses that are incurred for making a film. So please contribute if you leave early to the donation bucket. We have a few more showings of this film tomorrow. We're at the layover.
Yep, tomorrow. Seven.
At 7 in Oakland. Then it'll be showing Saturday at the San Francisco Main Library. And it will also be showing in Santa Rosa at the Arlene Francis Center on Sunday. So it's a few different places that it'll be showing. Please contribute if you think this is the kind of films that you would like to see more of them being made. Please contribute. I mean, the thank you is cool, but funding is better.
I thought that the most powerful thing, the most powerful part of this film is just that you offered the counter-narrative. We never get the counter-narrative to people's narrative because the tool that's used against us and one of the most powerful weapons used against, the people basically is narrative. And one of the most powerful aspects of narrative is the ability to edit and the ability to tell the lie of omission. And what they did was they omitted, like this brother just told me, they omitted his firsthand primary narrative. He just told us that. So thank you for that. One of the things that happens when people tell the lie of omission is they get to remain anonymous. And so it seems to me that the name of this parole officer has remained anonymous. Who is this person? Who else is he railroaded like this?
Yeah.
is, you know, that's what, those are some of the things that I want to know. And my question is that during your research, were you able to overturn or find out anything about this parole office?
I inquired, and actually I really wish I would have recorded that phone conversation because my whole approach the whole time, well, just to back up a little bit, like, the model that I had used for this film was basically Richard Wright's model in writing Native Son, right? So I was taking this character that supposedly is unlikable and trying to transform him back into a human being. Oh crap, I forgot what I was going to say. Who was I talking about?
You're talking about that, the parole officer, bro.
Oh yeah, yeah. So part of that process too, man, like, my opinion is that, like, as far as radical cinema goes, radical filmmaking, radical politics in general, like, we have to always take on the strongest, most powerful arguments of our enemies, you know, and tear those apart. And so that's something that was special about this particular situation because, I mean, you know, they have a very strong argument that resonates with a lot of people, right? And if you can tear that apart, you can really start seeing how this whole system, this whole, you know, how hegemony essentially works. So when I was trying to, you know, get information about the parole officer or whatever, any of the times that I addressed the police, like, I pretty much always took them at their best, even though I knew that, like, they aren't. I mean, it's pretty evident to me that they went in to murder him, you know,
that's right.
And they had a conversation out there, and they fabricated this whole thing, right? But we can't really prove that, right? So the irony of it is that if you just take them at their best, like, you can, it still is revealed, you know? But, yeah, they, in terms of the parole officer, I couldn't get any information. And, like, when I'm talking to this guy, like, CDCR representative, spokesperson, whatever, that guy just, like, went off on me about what a horrible yellow fucking journalist I am, and, like, you know, how ashamed I should be of myself and this and that. And it's a trip because it's not that this guy's, like, trying to tear me apart as much as it's, like, he actually really believes it, what he's saying, you know, and that's the most frightening part of it. And I think that's something I was trying to touch on. It's like the most frightening element of the, you know, that we're dealing with here is, like, the naturalization of these really twisted, contorted social relationships. You know,
it's a few things that I wanted to point out that I thought was very interesting about the characterization of Lavelle Mixon as a rapist. I don't know how many of you historically know that Nat Turner was originally called a rapist also. So we have to even look at how the term rapist is used politically against black men in particular that are enemies of the state. You know, I think that that's something that was interesting. Another thing that I liked about this film is it kept it real. How many of you guys seen Fruitvale Station? By a show of hands. How many of you guys liked it? I'm glad I saw some hands go down. But the point of it was, it wasn't that he was giving away his, you know, Sam didn't make a story about Lavelle giving his grandmother's favorite recipe to a woman in Whole Foods or saving a dog that was hit by a car minutes before he was killed. You know, in my opinion, the media was used to kill the Oscar Grant campaign also by trying to canonize Oscar Grant. The reality is when the rebellions broke out in Oakland and in defense of the life of Oscar Grant, it wasn't because we knew that Oscar Grant's favorite color was green or he ate Cheerios in the morning or anything like that. It was because he was a nameless, faceless black male that this was happening to on a routine basis all throughout the country. And I want to say even black person because around the time
of Oscar Grant and Lavelle Nixon. A few months later in Detroit, you had Ayanna Jones, the 7-year-old who the police stormed the house very much like this for the 48 Hours television show, where they threw a flash grenade where she was laying on the couch with her grandmother that landed on her, burned her up when she jumped up because she was on fire. They shot her in the head. If you don't know anything about this case, you owe it to yourself and to the people to learn about this case. And I think it's important for us to not think of these in an isolated, in the Oscar Grant era, you know, and Oakland was fighting. Ooh, man, this shit happens every day. This goes on every day somewhere in the United States, if not in the Bay Area. So I think that, I think it's important for us to support Sam's project because it's being told in a truthful manner. Whereas, you know, Forrest Whitaker and Hollywood, you know, took Oscar Grant's campaign and gutted it and canonized him as into being like a Martin Luther King or a Malcolm X or something like that, when in reality, and it's no disrespect to Oscar Grant or his family, but the reality is most people in this room didn't even know who he was when we started to protest and rebel. And I think that's important to know, you know, because Hollywood is going to try to revise history as to what really happened. So it's important that we remember what really happened. If you, any more people from the community have anything they want to say, please line up on this side. But I also want to give some time to Gerald Sanders, who you guys saw in the movie. Gerald, what did you think was important about the film?
Well, largely, I think Sam did the research, and a lot of that footage made it, I think, the film told a story. So I think the film was honest, and that matters to me. Because here's an ugly truth about this film. There are scores of organizations in the Bay Area that claim to be prepared to smash the state. They're posturing, they're ready to sock it to Whitey or whatever, you know. But look, let me tell you something. When this happened, and I read everything I can get my hands on, the left press said nothing. They kept their mouth shut on this. And you know what? No, I'm not talking about the Bayview's community paper. I'm talking about organizations that proclaim that they're prepared to smash the state. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people you would think would have something to say about this. Nothing. Now, why is that? Well, events like this are a test of us all, actually. But that showed me, and what it meant to me, is that some of these groups that write about what they're going to do or what somebody's doing in El Salvador or, you know, somewhere else, are simply not real. Events like this show you what people and organizations are really made of. But here's another point, and this is the hopeful point on this. I got blabbed several. Let me just quickly run through them. When this occurred, the media, as you see, came on the scene, and they wanted to get the story. But they didn't want to get the story. They wanted to create the story. And what I mean by that is, they saw there were some black people that literally were crying because these four policemen had been killed. There are people that feel for human life in general. It's understandable to me that people would be sad. These people were killed, policemen were killed. And they're gathering around and they're trying to take the pictures from different angles. And then a group called Oakland Cop Watch shows up with the very dangerous weapon, a leaflet, and begin to share this leaflet with the people in the community. And what happened immediately is there was a polarization right there in the community. Because you want to know something? Black people are not one guy. We don't all agree on anything. All right? Some people have different opinions. So immediately what happened when people started reading that leaflet and thinking about it and talking to each other about it, what you had was, I called it a polarization, and that's what it was. You had some people that genuinely were sad that the police had been killed. But more and more, you started to hear the voice of what you saw here. See, what you see here, my man went and actually went in the community to talk to people. But I'm talking about right when the incident occurred, and then the media showed up. There was no one out there. People were not so prepared to, you know, to express themselves. But when they got their hands on that leaflet and started talking to each other, all of a sudden the real feeling started to come out. And you started to get the FTPs, Free the People, of course. And other comments and feelings began to become self-evident. You know what I mean? And that's important because what that shows you, and this is a lesson that should never be lost, is that what you do matters. When you show up in real situations like this, how you conduct yourself and what you do can change the chemistry in the situation and the outcome. Very important, because it wound up wrecking that little, whatever the corporate media, you know, sham they were trying to pull, which is good, in my opinion. All right? But two people and a leaflet. That's all it took. All right? The next point, though, I think we need to pay attention to is this ceremony at the Coliseum. I made a comment in the film, but it's something else I wanted people to see, the racist character of this ceremony for these four police officers. And I'll just say this. At this time, Ron Dellums was the mayor of the city of Oakland. Right? At this event, this, whatever they call it, when they had all these people, you know, showing remorse for the police, not one black person in the city of Oakland spoke. Not one. Now that's hard to do when the mayor is black. You understand? The administration has numerous black people in it. Not one. It says something without saying anything. You come to your own conclusion on that. Also, on this question of demonization, now look, we've seen this sexual demonization is always used. They come on television, you know, somebody did nasty with somebody, and, you know, wah, 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 this is supposed to be real important. I'm trying to figure out where my next meal is coming from. They're talking about some foolishness. But they do this regularly. And in fact, sometimes in a very important situation it comes up, and I'm talking about now the demonization of Assange, the gentleman that did WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks is an organization that puts out information about the government, etc. You know, when they get information about something the government's doing and they know the government doesn't want anybody to know about it, they publish it. In fact, today, Mr. Assange is held up in Great Britain, in London. You know, he's in the building. He can't leave, you know. I forget the name of the consulate.
Ecuador.
Thank you very much, brother. And, you know, but understand, before that, they put out a statement that this man had committed a rape. And not to say that it's theoretically impossible for him to do it, but it just shows you how silly, pitiful, and immature some American leftists are. The ruling class says that their enemy, who's exposing their evils, is a rapist. The first things that come through your mind is you ain't told the truth about nothing as long as I know of you, so why should I believe that? But no, they picked it up. They start spreading it around. And I'm sorry, that I don't know what you want to call it, but many of these people call themselves feminists. I'm not sure quite what that means, but I could add a couple other words before it. The point is, their foolishness made them an instrument of the ruling class in a very important situation where this man, Assange's life, is up on the line. And whether or not what he did with those other two women when the doors was shut is really not my business. I could care less. I want to read the documents myself. But it just shows you Now this spirit, let's go to Nixon. Here, they start talking about this man as a rapist. I'm sorry, but as soon as I heard it, and maybe I'm, you know, jaded or whatever, I just felt it was bullshit right off the top. But believe it or not, people believe this crap. And therefore, what does that mean? What is the lesson that we have to observe? When they start lying like that and we know they're lying, we need to do a little research and prove it. Take the time to show people why they should never believe anything that comes out their lying mouths about people in these situations. Remember, every time they murder a black man, doesn't have to be a black man, a Latino, or a white person, they do murder white people too, don't kid yourself. They feel compelled to drag their name through the mud, so to speak. So they try to find anything in their past that might put them in a negative light. Why do they do that? Are they just, you know, meanie weenies? No, that's a part of the system. They do that to justify themselves, to make it appear that what they did was necessary to justify the unjustifiable. And lastly, one more point. Now, you know, this thing with the parole officers, I'm glad that brother raised it, because there's actually, here's a solution, and it just shows you how poorly organized we are, because that's what it comes down to. Here, they got the brother staying home for a week because he's waiting for a parole officer. Parole officer is supposed to tell you specifically what time and what hour he will be there. If he fails to do that, you have to get that in writing. They can't violate you because you didn't wait 40 hours. That's madness. So we have to begin to learn to look carefully. I saw my son, been in and out of prison 7 times. Finally, they got him, put 144 years on him. And in order to do so, made him a gang leader. Gerald ain't no gang leader. You know, might not be the sharpest criminal on the planet, but he's no gang leader. But they just made up this story and get his man 144 years. This is madness. We can and should do something about this form of sentencing and storytelling as fake, you know, so-called evidence. It's not evidence at all. It's just fairy tales. But if you don't challenge it, guess what? All right? So here we have a situation where this man was saying these things. There's an answer. They make recorders that are the size of a pen. You click it, it's on. Put it in your pocket, and go in the parole office and let that fool talk that shit. Come to me, and we'll get paid. Because I'm very serious about this. See, they get away with things that they should never get away with if we use our heads. I know how demoralizing and depressing many of these things are, but never surrender your ability to reason. You know? Because we can do something about some of this stuff, but we let it go, and they keep doing it. All right. Hold on one more. And the last thing is all this hero worship thing. Now look, I understand LaBelle, and I wish that other people could, but I've talked to people that say, oh, he was a sociopath, and he killed. Well, and then I talked to brothers and sisters and say, you, Brother Hammond's business. Well, he shouldn't be forced to handle his business. They shouldn't be harassing people when they're simply driving in their car, going, minding their business. But get this, we don't need another hero. We don't need to take situations and create this beggar. Understanding reality is good enough. And more importantly, learning to deal with it. We don't need heroes, but what we need is organization in our community capable of defending our interests. And only through building such organizations rooted in the working people, in our communities, can we successfully defend ourselves. We don't need another hero. We do need organization.
We're going to go about another 10 minutes. Are there any more comments that people have?
I just want to ask one question for the director. Warren, I just came in a little bit after the start. It was very inspiring.
I hardly watch any movies, but I know I've been in court, federal and state court, for various reasons. Not only for being myself, looking for a place to sleep, trying to smoke a bud, trying to sit somewhere 1 minute after dark. So I know what that's like. I have no idea the depths of some of the human rights violations that go on in this country until I started traveling. But on the note, I was going to question if you've seen 12 O'Clock Boys, the documentary about Baltimore, the no chase ordinance there, the story of the people there building their own bikes, and it inspired me this in the same way as the documentary, like, because it gets you saying, yeah, you're still there with people emotionally, which is hard to do because unless you've experienced something, you don't know how it feels. Mm-hmm. But if a good documentary, I think, should make you feel there emotionally. So that I just want to big up everybody and respect to all. So I'll see that I take some first.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Can I add something? I wanted to add something to what Gerald was saying. I agree with him, but I think like a kind of defining feature of modern society is like our alienation from our own power. Like we don't realize that we can actually transform everything around us. Like so, just as an example, when it comes to the question of rape, not only is it, you know, a matter that you're likely being lied to, but even if it did happen, the solution isn't like going to come from the state. The solution isn't going to come from, you know, more police in your community or anything. It's, if you want a solution, it will only come from you, you know, transforming your reality and your world with, you know, people around you. And so, I mean, it's a big kind of obstacle, really, to believe that you can actually do something. But I mean, everybody has power, way more than they're aware of.
We have another question here, and another thing I want to say: on this panel on the abstract about just left-wing organizations and media. I used to work for KPFA. What was KPFA's position on Lavelle Mixon? Besides the position that I took on KPFA, it was nil. They didn't say anything. So a lot of times we have these fake left radio stations and these fake left journalists who basically follow in lockstep with what Amy Goodman is saying or whoever else they feel is the progressive, Cornel West, or whoever the hell else. But the reality is, you know, we need to put some of these media organizations and some of the, you know, a lot of times we want to talk about Fox News, and we need to challenge them too. But we have KPFA around the corner. Many of you guys know broadcasters at KPFA. Many of you listen to KPFA, and that's how you heard about this. So I think that you have that responsibility to push. I mean, whether we're talking about Lavelle Mixon, or we're talking about Libya, or we're talking about Zimbabwe, or whatever, when it comes to black people, progressive media that's not black run has a problem with telling the right story. So, you know, we'll leave that there.
All right, peace. I just wanted to say, I was living on 82nd and Mac Arthur on 8 at the time it happened, so it was deep because it was right there. But I'm from New York, you know, I'm from Harlem, and I remember when I was like 8, the Larry Davis
of Davis,
when he killed 6 New York police officers, then it came out after the fact that they were supplying crack to him to sell, because he was a DJ, to sell his parties, and he fell out with them. And that's how they ended up, that's who he killed, was those 6. Right. Came in a raid, the whole thing, it was hours and hours of searching, and he was up in the projects. But, so, as a kid, I remember that, but then, like, that's real positive to hear what the family said about them lying about the rape, because I myself, like Jared was saying, I myself to this day, looking at the fucking party, looking at the film, I was like, damn, I wish I wasn't part of the shit, because I could really hoorah right now, you know? But that stopped me, because I was like, oh, damn, it was a rape thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I was going to be like, damn, it's fucked up, but he still was, why? But you see what I'm saying? It's to this day, they never came out with no something to go get the movie. They didn't even say like that was put out and it was wrong, you know, like that. That is, you know, I thank the brother for that information. You know what I'm saying? But the real bottom line of this is the three strikes law, and you're going to spend the rest of your life in jail, so you got to go one way or another. And that's something we really need to think about in terms of reversing that. Because that's putting our people in a bad situation where we need to help against the votes.
Well, we're going to give Sam Stoker the last word, and, you know, we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah, I don't really have much else. I'm curious if there's any critiques or suggestions or whatever that folks have.
Well, I'm Tanisha Dixon. I'm LaVell's auntie, well, step auntie. But basically what I feel about the whole situation is...
Hold on 1 second. Excuse me. Can you all take that conversation outside? Thank you.
I don't know what anybody feels about redemption, but to me, I feel like if you make a mistake, you should be able to right your wrongs. And the way our system is set up, if you make a mistake, the police make sure that if you get out of jail, there's no way that you can right your wrongs. If you go apply for a job, if you have to write down you have a felony, 9 times out of 10, you will not get that job. They tell you to be truthful, but how can you be truthful if you know if you'll be truthful, you will not get that position? So, I mean, if you have to eat and you have to take care of your family, what choices do you have? You may not want to do the wrong thing, but if you have a choice to feed your family or do the right thing, what would your options be? And it's kind of unfair that they put people in that position. And, I mean, as far as my nephew goes, he came to me and his uncle, and he would always talk to us about how he wanted to make some changes, but they wouldn't give him that opportunity. And he's not the only person that is going to be taking that opportunity taken from him. And they'll be put in the same position. I don't want to go back to jail. What am I going to back to jail for if it's not going to redeem me or give me an opportunity to do something different? I mean, it's just something to think about, in my opinion.
Last thing I want to say about it is just, I think we have to realize that there is a war on working class people, and there's an even bigger war on the black and brown communities. We have to be conscious of the fact that the system is, I mean, to some extent, there is no redeeming the lower class people. You can graduate. I'll go to college right now. I went to college. You know, what does that mean? I'm from 83rd and Holland. What does that mean? I've been treated the same way on 73rd and Hayenberg. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think it's an issue of, you know, us doing the right thing. The question is the system ever going to do the right thing when they're making money off our exploitation and off of our problems? You know, to be honest, LaVell was worth more to the system in jail working for free than he was unemployed working or even working outside. So, you know, again, not even just about LaVell, but black working class, black people, brown people. Why do they make up the majority of the prison system? I mean, that's questions that we all need to ask. But Sam, you have a show tomorrow at 7. Do you have the venue's information?
Sort of.
2313 San Pablo.
There you go. 2313 San Pablo. What time? San Pablo on 23rd, 7 o'clock.
So make sure you guys, if you want to continue the conversation, if you have somebody else that needs to see this, you know, tomorrow is the 5-year anniversary, you know, so if you need to do something against police terrorism, come educate yourself. Educate somebody else. At least engage in the discussion if you're not going to do nothing else, you know, and bring some new light to a situation in your own mind or in someone else's mind. But please stick around. Sam, I know, will be around. I'll be around. I believe Gerald is right outside.
and the Mixon family, will you guys be here for a few minutes? They'll be here for a few minutes. So please, let's share information. Let's see what we can do to better combat the situation. Right? Thank y'all for coming.